Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. NAHU submitted three comment letters to the Trump administration last week in regard to several proposed rules, the 2021 Notice of Benefit and Payment Parameters, the draft letter to issuers, and the proposed rule that would allow importation of certain prescription drugs from Canada. In addition, HHS and CMS released finalized rules aimed at giving patients greater access to their health data. On this week's episode, Marcy explains these proposals and our comments, as well as what the finalized ONC rule means for consumers and carriers. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. The podcast is distributed on these platforms every Friday and is included in NAHU's weekly member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. Let's start with the finalized rules from ONC and CMS. These rules were designed to allow consumers greater and easier access to their health information. How exactly do these rules go about trying to achieve this?
Dan, these rules are different than many of the transparency rules that we have discussed previously. These are not the same as the hospital transparency rule or the transparency and coverage. So I just want to point that out before we start talking about them, because they seem to touch on some of the same data points, but they are different in their perspective and what they're doing. So we are still waiting for that final rule on transparency and coverage, but we have talked about the final rule on hospital transparency. But to get to your question about what we just received from the ONC, this is an extension of some of the pieces that were in the 21st Century Cures Act that Congress passed in December of 2016. And it really enforces the ability for health data to be accessed on different apps on your phone. So trying to make sure that health data is accessible to consumers in these different ways, and it doesn't really specify what type of app it is. So I think we're going to see some more information coming out of this, but that's kind of the very basic premise of these rules that came out. I think it's also just really aligning a lot of technology with the times that we're living in and making sure that the accessibility of health data, patients being able to access their files, being able to share it when they're going for treatments with different types of healthcare practitioners, all of those things are up to speed with what we're able to do with the technology that we all have in our pockets every day.
Moving on to our recently submitted comment letters, what changes did CMS suggest in the proposed 2021 MBPP and letter to issuers?
So these are the proposed rules that come out every year in advance of the following plan year, specifically for the exchanges. So this is for the 2021 plan year for the Notice of Benefits and Payment Parameters, or as Dan just referenced it, the NBPP, and then the letter to issuers. And we don't usually get a lot of big changes, especially now that we're several years into having the marketplaces, but we do have a few things. I will note that this is the latest that we've ever received the MBPP and letter to issuers. So in our comments, we did caution that this could affect carriers' ability to be able to adapt to anything that's in the final rules. So we are still waiting on the final rule from these. And this is because carriers through the late spring and early summer are filing their plans with the departments of insurance in the different states that they're active in, as well as with the federal government. And so this is really the time frame right now where they are internally finishing up their plan designs before submitting them for approval. So we did caution that the timing of this coming out so late could have an impact on that. Some of the things that were included were requirements for the group health insurance market, specifically on accepted benefit HRAs that are offered by non-government plan sponsors. And we did support the aspect that was included here that all sponsors of accepted benefit HRAs annually provide a notice to participants and beneficiaries about the different features of the accepted benefits HRA. I mean, I think that's pretty straightforward. And of course, we support the ability for beneficiaries to receive that from their employers. Right. We also commented on employer-sponsored plan verification. We have always been very concerned about the ability for employers to provide adequate notice to employees so that if an employee does go to the exchange, it is clear that they have employer-sponsored coverage if that's offered, and being able to verify specifically whether it is affordable coverage so that it can be determined if that employee could be subject to a subsidy. And in the proposed rule, CMS indicates that it's considering eliminating the random employer sampling process because it has low participation and the data from employers isn't really usable. So for the 2020 and 2021 plan year, CMS is proposing to take no enforcement action against exchanges that fail to perform random sampling. But the proposed rule also indicates that CMS is studying why people with job-based coverage might choose to enroll in an exchange plan, a qualified health plan, over their employer's coverage. And we're expecting the results of that study to come out later this year, possibly in the fall. But we did repeat some of our concerns that we have mentioned several times before about the workability and effectiveness of employer coverage verification notice and the appeals processes as they currently stand with exchanges, and that we believe that adequate exchange-based verification of qualified offers of employer-sponsored coverage would really prevent many individuals from receiving subsidies that they don't qualify for. So really trying to reinforce some of the comments that we have provided previously. One of the biggest pieces in the MBPP that we're concerned about is section on auto re-enrollment. And we have been very vocal about auto re-enrollment since the beginning of the exchanges. And this year, the proposed rule would make a significant change to the current policy for auto re-enrollment and tax credit determinations for the lowest income consumers. They asked for comments about this. And we've been, like I said, very vocal about any type of auto re-enrollment process. In the past, some of the auto re-enrollment that we've seen, especially in some of the years where we saw a lot of carriers dropping out of the exchange, and there was an auto re-enrollment process put in place that would kind of put together an algorithm and would remap people into the most similar type of plan that was available on the exchange, even if it was with a different carrier or a different type of plan. And we felt very strongly that the beneficiaries really needed to be contacted in part of their choices if they are not able to renew specifically in the plan that they are already enrolled in. This should be something that is automatically done for them. So here, when it's focusing on a very specific demographic, those very low income individuals, we still believe that this could generate a great deal of consumer confusion if they're automatically re-enrolled in plans, and especially if it's not the plan, if their plan is no longer available that they were previously on, and that CMS needs to do everything that is possible to be able to reach out to those folks and have them actively involved in choosing the plan that they're enrolled in. And of course, as agents and brokers, we do encourage you all to reach out to the clients that you have that are in the exchanges every year during open enrollment to make sure that as things in their life may have changed, that they're still in the plan that's best for them. But specifically with some of these plans that are no longer available, making sure that they get into the plan that's most appropriate for them, but also specifically for these low-income individuals, making sure that their tax credit eligibility status remains intact if they're receiving a subsidy, which are some of the things that could be jeopardized with the auto re-enrollment process that is proposed in the MBPP. And then as kind of an extension of that, there are also requirements in the proposed NBPP for timely submission of enrollment reconciliation data. This is something that we support that would require an issuer to submit the latest available verified enrollment information in its reconciliation submissions and inform the exchange of any errors within 30 days. This would really prevent a lot of errors that we see, specifically with folks being able to prove their eligibility in enrollment, as well as folks that may be coming into the exchange that have employer-sponsored coverage and trying to get verification, being able to have the enrollment reconciliation submissions reported within 30 days can help to make sure that there aren't multiple enrollments, that the data is correct, and that folks that may be receiving coverage outside of the exchange aren't then able to enroll in an exchange product. Lastly, with the NBPP, it does include a section on promoting value-based insurance design. And while it doesn't create any new requirements for exchanges or issuers related to value-based insurance design, it does request some information about ways in which CMS can promote coverage with value-based components. So our suggestion for CMS was that they could distinguish the value-based plans as part of the display options with all of the other qualified health plans by using some type of special symbol or some way of signifying that these are a bit different. We believe it would be beneficial if the CMS training for certified brokers, as well as the CMS training for other assisters, also included additional information about value-based coverage to help promote this as an option for enrollees. So CMS is also looking at how they could determine if plan designs meet the value-based criteria. And this is something that we suggested to CMS may be best determined by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, the NAIC, because they oversee these plans on a state level. And it may be best for those regulators to be the determinants of what meets these special value-based criteria. With the letter to issuers for the 2021 plan year, there weren't a lot of big changes here, but this was a great opportunity for us to reinforce a lot of the requests that we've had over the past several years with the exchanges on different items. So one of those items was the ability for carriers and for the exchanges to release the information about plan designs and pricing to agents and brokers at least 2 weeks before open enrollment. We hear you. We know that you are getting this information at the last minute as you're preparing for open enrollment, and it causes even more stress on that fourth quarter crunch for you guys. So once again, we are submitting in writing that that information be released to you all, again, at least 2 weeks before open enrollment. We'd like to see it released to you all at least a month in advance, but we're taking small steps and asking for it at that 2 week mark so that you can better prepare yourselves for open enrollment and to assist your clients. There is also a section in the letter to issuers about QHP data changes. And this is another area where we took the opportunity to once again voice our concerns about compensation rate for brokers and agents and the way that some carriers have manipulated it throughout the plan year. And with these data changes, the section does address other items, but we, like I said, took the opportunity to ask that once a QHP is approved, once that plan design is approved with the broker compensation included in the premium rate and in the plan design, if there are any changes throughout the year, that the issuer may not alter the general compensation rate for brokers from the proposed and approved plan design that they have for that year. So that has to be locked in. CMS has released guidance previously that does not allow carriers to change this or for it to have a large variance, but we have seen that carriers have not heeded that guidance. So we felt very strongly that with this section, we should reinforce this and ask once again that once that compensation rate is set, that it cannot change throughout the year.
Moving on to the pharmaceutical space, The idea of importing drugs from outside the U.S. has been on the table for quite some time. What specifically did this proposed rule suggest?
This is the administration's attempt at trying to do something to control drug costs. As we have talked about previously on the podcast and a lot while we were together just a few weeks ago in DC for Capitol Conference, Congress is very divided on how to address the rising costs of prescription drugs. We had Nancy Pelosi's HR 3 pass the House, but it's now sitting over at the Senate, and the Senate Republicans don't really have an interest in picking that up. And then Chuck Grassley on the Senate side has his bill that he's promoting, but he hasn't really been able to get the support of some of his colleagues on the right side of the aisle. So we've seen a lot of stalling out in Congress, and I think the administration really felt like they needed to try to do something about the significant cost of prescription drugs. And in comparison to other industrialized countries, the government is much more involved in either negotiating the cost of drugs or actually setting limits on a maximum cost. That's what we're seeing in other countries. And so the retail cost of specific prescription medications is often a fraction of the price of the same medication sold in the U.S. So in recognition of the substantial difference in cost here, the proposed rule would allow for the importation of certain prescription drugs from Canada. And it would do this by creating limited importation programs authorized by certain sections of the FDA. These would be managed by states or other non-federal government entities. The importation program could be co-sponsored by a pharmacist, a wholesaler, or another state or non-federal entity. So because it is limited to these specific types of entities that are able to participate, this is not going to have a large effect on what we see across the board for possible importation or in some cases reimportation of drugs. And we're not expecting a huge impact on the cost of drugs because of this proposed rule, but it is one step that the administration is able to take, something that is within their administrative powers that the agencies can act on. So again, to have a more holistic impact on the price of drugs, we really need Congress to act. But for right now, this is what the administration is doing. And with that, for our comments, we want to make sure that there is a large focus on safety. Some of the many measures in the proposal are designed to ensure that the importation programs distribute quality medications, screening drugs for damage or counterfeiting, relabeling provisions, and requiring FDA approval of each shipment, along with laboratory testing of samples and the development of a system so that physicians and consumers can report adverse drug interactions. And we do believe that these protections are very important, making sure that we know what type of drugs are coming back into the country, that the labels are in a language that can be understood by consumers, and that the drugs are kept safe throughout the packaging and shipment process. So again, while the importation programs are very limited, only a state government, tribal, or territorial government entity would be eligible, the eligible entities will need to be able to take on the significant requirements required for program approval and maintenance. And so again, we just want to stress that only a very small portion of the American public would potentially benefit from this. This also wouldn't impact all types of pharmaceuticals. There is a scope of drugs that are available through the importation program. So it's also important to note that this isn't going to affect all types of drugs. So while we're considering this proposed rule, and again, we'll have to wait to see what the final rule entails, it is important to remember that millions of individual consumers, including many Medicare beneficiaries, routinely reimport personal use drugs during the course of business and personal travel or through specific trips that they take to bordering countries like Canada. And we want to make sure that those individuals are not negatively impacted by this rule, that they're still able to continue that practice. In addition to that, American Employer Group plan sponsors have really embrace the concepts of medical tourism and personal use importation as a means of helping to reduce the cost of prescription drugs. So once again, examples like the state of Utah that currently operates a program for state employees that reimburses employees with certain high drug expenses and actually pays for travel for these employees to obtain certain specialty prescriptions from Canadian and Mexican pharmacies. We, like I mentioned earlier, don't want to see plans like this that are working for different employer groups, that are working for those that are obtaining their personal use importation of drugs. We don't want to see them impacted by this rule. We want to make sure that they're able to continue to access their low-cost prescriptions in a plan that is safe and viable for them. Another concern with this rule is supplies in Canada specifically could run low, that they may not be able to handle the demand of American consumers. And we don't want to see an effect where we're artificially inflating prices under the mask of this reimportation process.
It is now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour Toast of the Week. Marcy, what are we toasting to this week?
This week, we are toasting to your health and safety during the coronavirus pandemic. Make sure that you are washing your hands. Hopefully, you are doing that anyway. But soap and water. If you need more information, you can go to nehu.org and we have some updates on the coronavirus and what you should be doing to help protect yourself and those around you. And we'll also be providing updates on any changes from health insurance carriers for plan designs and what your clients need to know if they are infected and need coverage.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nahu.org.